the tax collectors and sinners, all drawing near to listen to Jesus. But the Pharisees and scribes began to complain, saying, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." So to them Jesus addressed this parable.
Said to his father, "Father, give me the share of the estate coming to me." And so the father divided up the property between the two brothers. And after a few days, the younger son collected all his belongings and set off for a distant land, where he squandered his inheritance on a life of dissipation. When he had freely spent everything, a severe famine struck that country, and he found himself in dire need. So he hired himself out to one of the local citizens, who sent him to his farm to tend to his swine. And he longed to eat the pods, which were food for the swine, but no one gave him anything to eat.
Coming to his senses, he thought, "How many of my father's hired workers have more than enough to eat? But here I am, dying from hunger. I shall get up and go to my father, and I shall say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I no longer deserve to be called your son. Treat me as you would treat one of your hired workers.' So he got up and went back to his father.
While he was still a long way off, his father caught sight of him and was filled with compassion. He ran to his son, embraced him, and he kissed him. But his son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I no longer deserve to be called your son.' But his father ordered his servants, 'Quickly, bring out the finest robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Take the fatted calf and kill it. Let us celebrate with a feast. This son of mine was dead and has come back to life. He was lost and he has been found.' And then the celebration began."
Now the older son had been out in the field, and on his way back, as he neared the house, he heard the sound of music and dancing. He called one of the servants and asked him what this might mean. The servant said to him, "Your brother has returned, and your father has slaughtered the fattened calf because he has come back safe and sound." He became angry. When he refused to enter the house, his father came out and pleaded with him. He said to his father, "Look, all these years I served you, and not once did I disobey your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat to feast on with my friends. But when your son returns, who swallowed up your property with prostitutes, for him you slaughtered the fattened calf."
But the father said to him, "My son, you are here with me always, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice because your brother was dead and has come back to life. He was lost, and he is found." The Gospel of the Lord. This text is taken from the 15th chapter of the book of Luke. A very familiar and endearing revelation for us, and found only in Luke's gospel. There's something unique and peculiar about Luke's gospel. There's a compassion about Luke's gospel, as we know. We have reflected on it many times. Luke's gospel has the prodigal son, the good Samaritan, the Pharisee, and the publican, chapter 18. Luke's gospel, and only Luke, as Jesus forgiving those who crucified him. Luke's gospel is very sensitive, a very compassionate gospel. I became supremely attached to this text. I have read this and found it more consoling than any place else in the entire New Testament. I was prompted to become attached to this in 1992 when I read Henry Nouwen's book, The Return of the Prodigal Son. Many of you have read that. If you have not, I urge you to do so. I know Anne in the bookstore is going to say, why didn't you tell me in advance? But she does have it in stock, and it's out in paperback, and it's not expensive. But it's an enormous gift. It's an incredible revelation of who God is. When I became, I read this, maybe many, many times. I mark on my books where I read them. I read it all over the world. I mean, carried this book with me. I read it in Nairobi, in Rome, in Russia. I read it here. I read it everywhere. I took this book with me because this book tells me about myself and it tells me about my God. I'd like to reflect on that. The book is based on a Rembrandt painting, which is at the Hermitage in St. Petersburg. And it was a masterpiece by this Flemish master at the very end of his life. If you read his life, I was prompted to read his life to understand the painting. He was born in 1606, and he lived to be 63 years old, but he had a tortured, very confused, painful life. And at the end of his life, he writes himself, or he paints himself into this masterpiece. Rembrandt is especially remarkable for his self-portraits. He has 80 self-portraits, and this is the last and maybe the greatest self-portrait. So he finds himself somehow in this masterpiece of the return of the prodigal son. After I had read the book a few times, I put it on my bucket list that I have to go to St. Petersburg to see the painting. And in the year 2000, I went there. I was up in the Baltics, and I went all the way to St. Petersburg, and I spent hours in front of that painting, making notes and rereading Henry Nouwen's book. So I became very attached to this. It's a revelation of the Father, of the true God, but it's also a reflection on the two sons. And when you read this or look at the painting and reflect on the gospel, you wonder, which of the two sons am I? I've thought about that a lot. The elder son is a very observant son. He's productive. He's the ideal son. He meets all the expectations of his parents, of his father. He stays with his father. He works on the farm. I mean, he's the best son to have. And yet, he has very little heart. He's resentful. He's jealous. He's somehow carrying an anger inside of him. He's a sinner. Even though he looks like an ideal, he's a sinner. But his sins are concealed. They're masked inside his formality. Somebody who keeps all the laws, observes all the mandates, but somehow is carrying sin inside of him that he does not see. The younger son is reckless, selfish, ungrateful, and wanders off and lives his dissipated life. And then somehow he goes through a recovery and he returns to his father. Now, rather interestingly, Rembrandt's painting has the father as an old man who is blind. So then he was asked, if the old man was blind, how could he see his son when he is far off, run out to meet him? He said he sees him with his heart. You see things with your heart. If you allow your heart to see that you cannot see with your eyes. Rather interestingly, also the painting has the left hand of the father laid upon the son in reconciliation, a masculine hand, the right hand, a feminine hand, the right and left brain. It's kind of interesting. just as the God of love appears in all people. So the insightful question, which I wrote into journals, is, who am I? Well, I'm a little bit of the elder son, and I'm a little bit of the younger son. I've been very observant, then I have been reckless. Either way, I have to see myself as a sinner, needing to be reconciled. So the good question to ask ourselves is, consider how you think God sees you. How do you think God looks upon you? What do you think God thinks of you? Because the answer you give is however you think God looks upon you is the manner in which you look upon yourself. See, the elder son keeps all the laws. He's productive. He's deserving. He merits the respect of his father. He sees his father as somebody that he must satisfy. He must please his father. And that's the way he earns the respect of his father. But he doesn't experience the love of his father. The younger son wanders off and becomes a really public sinner. When he comes back, he experiences the love of his father. Now, both sons left home, but only one came back. And the one that came back knew he was a sinner. Remember, the text says the elder son would not go into the home. The father had to come out to meet him. But even when he met him, it says he doesn't go in. He goes out to meet the younger son. He just doesn't forgive him. He heals him. He makes him whole. Put shoes on his feet. Remember, there was an old African-American spiritual, all God's people got shoes. Slaves didn't have shoes. Put shoes, set him free. He's my son. Put a robe on him. Return his sonship. Put a ring on his finger. Give him the Visa card. That's his signature. He can sign for me. I have confidence in him. I restore him. I say, God of love, restore me. Make me whole. However I see myself, the prayer is to allow God to make you whole. Not perfect. Not perfect, but whole. Let God embrace you. There's a little bit of the elder in us, a little bit of the resentful. We'll find ourselves saying sometimes, but I didn't deserve this. This shouldn't have happened to me. This might happen to this person, the sinner, or might happen to that sinner. But like, I've gone to the 9:30 Mass every Sunday. I've used the envelopes. I've sold the hot dogs. I work in the church. How could this happen to me? Because I am the elder son, and I deserve better. The younger son says, I don't deserve anything. So God's love is gift. It's free. I don't have to earn it. It's given to me. One is a theology of merit. The other, a theology of grace. You can see how it's easy to get attached to this understanding and experience of God. That somehow, when you look upon yourself and you see your sinful condition, but you say, but God loves me just as I am. Let us celebrate, because this person who was lost is found. He was dead and he's come back to life. Not only, it doesn't just mean something for me or for you in your own journey. It means that somehow you have to bring this God alive for others. Whoever in your life doesn't meet your expectations. When your children wander off. When they disappoint you. When your husband, your wife, somebody in your family is different and they create chaos. And there's a need to be healed, to be reconciled, to draw them back in the name of God who is love. To give back to others what I myself have received. To understand when I see myself as a sinner, I cannot be jealous. I can't stand in judgment over another people. I can't say to God, but I don't deserve this to happen to me. Is it so? Is it possible that the only way in which we can experience God's love is to sin? I'm not recommending it now, you know. Only when you see your sin. Not everybody sees sin. It's only when you see your sin, your failure, your weakness, the things that are not virtuous about your life, only when you see those can you find out the meaning of love. I mean, if I satisfy you, the husband and wife, I'm always perfect for you and always good for you, you'll never know how much you are loved. It's when you break down, when you sin, when you're broken and you're empty and you're impoverished and somebody holds you and said, but you're precious. I am here to heal you, to love you. I am here to make you whole. I am here to teach you that God is present in the manner in which we love one another. Is this a church? Is this a church that's coming to life in the love of God and the healing and the acceptance? Oh, is there somebody in God's love who is beyond embrace? Have we sometimes reduced and abused the true God by excluding people? By telling people they don't qualify. Abused God's wondrous revelation of infinite love. Have we failed to live out the gift which is given to us? Given to me. I have been healed and forgiven many, many times. I've been on my knees. In my darkest moments, I went back to the 15th chapter of the Gospel of Luke, and I went back and I read again Henry Nouwen's book, and somehow God restored me to wholeness, gave me confidence, assured me to believe in myself as a sinner, precious to God, lovable. The most difficult person in a church community is the perfect person. They drive you crazy. It's true. They're hard on people. They make judgments. The most beautiful person is the sinner who is loved into grace. So my friends, be a sinner who is loved into grace. Amen.